Horimon who slaughters an animal for the sake of the mountains, l'shem gvois for the sake of the hills, l'shem yamim for the sake of the seas, l'shem nahorais for the sake of the rivers, l'shem edboris or for the sake of the deserts, in order to serve them as idolatry. In general, if somebody serves, he slaughters an animal for the sake of it being brought as a sacrifice for a particular idol, then that animal becomes forbidden to benefit from. Not only is it forbidden to eat it, but it's even forbidden to benefit from that animal. The Mishnah discusses, however, these cases where the Mishnah in Maseches Avodah Zarah teaches that the items which they are serving do not become forbidden to benefit from. For the obvious reason that if that was the case, we would end up not being able to benefit from most of the natural world. Something which is natural and has been here since the beginning of creation cannot become forbidden by somebody serving it as an idol. So if somebody slaughters an animal for the sake of one of these things, even if it's to serve it, the slaughtering would not forbid it to in benefit. And in fact, on a Torah level, one is even able to eat it. However, the Mishnah says, at least midrabbanon shechitosei pasula, its slaughtering is invalid because it appears very similar to a regular case where somebody slaughters an animal for the sake of idolatry, in which case it would generally be forbidden to benefit from. Now what happens if there are shnayim, two people, oichazin basakin, holding on to one knife, v'shoichatin, and they are slaughtering an animal together? And one of these people, echad l'shem echad mikol elu, one of them has the intentions that he's slaughtering it for the sake of one of these things. He's slaughtering it in order to bring it as a sacrifice to the mountains, etc. The echad l'shem davar kosher, whereas the other person is slaughtering it for a fitting purpose with the correct intentions without any forbidden thoughts of it being for the sake of idolatry. The Mishnah says that since involved in this act of slaughtering was a intention for it to be for the sake of idolatry, shechitos and pasula, their slaughtering is invalid. Once again, midrabbanon, and it will be forbidden to eat the meat of that animal. Mishnah test. This Mishnah continues to bring a few more examples of ways to slaughter something which cannot be done due to the appearance that it is being done for in a forbidden way. It will be forbidden because it appears like he's doing something similar to the previous Mishnah. In Shechatin L'Lesuich Yamim, one cannot slaughter an animal in a way that its blood will go directly into the sea, V'Lo'Lesuich Nahoris, or into the rivers, V'Lo'Lesuich Kelim, or into utensils, that the blood from the animal's neck will drip directly into a container. In the first two cases, because it appears like he is offering the sacrifice, he's slaughtering the animal in order to offer it for the sake of the water, which was worshipped by many people. And likewise, he cannot allow the blood to go directly into a container, because then it might appear like he wants to use that blood in order to throw it towards an idol and serve the idol with that blood. However, one is allowed to slaughter it such that the blood will go into a small pool of water. The Gemara adds that it should be dirty water, because otherwise if there is a reflection, if one can see a reflection in the water, then there is still a concern that people might think that he is offering it to an animal which is flying up above, a bird, or something else natural which can be seen in the reflection, and there is still a concern that it might appear that he is slaughtering it for the sake of idolatry, and therefore only in a case where it is a small pool of dirty water in which one cannot see a reflection, only then would it be permitted to slaughter the animal such that the blood will fall into this pool of water. Those who wish to slaughter an animal for the sake of idolatry and just to serve the water or something, they would do it in a clean stream. They wouldn't do it in a small pool of dirty water. And similarly, if one is on a boat, he may slaughter the animal in a way that the blood will drip onto a container and then go directly into the sea. And over here, both concerns are avoided. It does not look like he is catching it in a container in order to use it for serving an idolatry, since it's clear that he's just doing it so that the floor of the ship doesn't get dirty with blood. He's not standing on the ground, earth, where he doesn't mind if the blood goes onto the ground. And people can see it's directly going into the sea. As well as that, there's also no concern that people will think that he's trying to serve the sea, because then he would allow the blood to go directly into the sea. And so by doing it in this method, both concerns are avoided, and it will not appear like he is slaughtering the animal for the sake of idolatry. Now, there was a practice of certain heretics to slaughter animals in a way that the blood would go directly into a pit in the ground. And because of that, the Mishnah says, "Midrabbanan in shrichatin l'guma kol ikar," it is forbidden to slaughter an animal so that the blood will go directly into a hole, a pit in the ground. It is forbidden totally in any case. The Mishnah's point is that even in one's house, privately, where nobody else can see, it is forbidden there as well. However, one is allowed to make a hole or a pit in his private property, so that the blood will flow into there, meaning he allows the blood to go onto the ground from the neck of the animal, and then he would make a slope or something like that, and then the blood would go into the pit, but indirectly. That way, he is showing a difference between that and the practice of these heretics. And it's clear that he's doing it just so that he can direct all of the blood in his own property to one area instead of it spreading and dirtying a lot of his private property. However, the Mishnah qualifies, "Uvashuk lo yasekein." In the market, this is forbidden to do. Even if one allows the blood to go onto the ground such that it will only then flow indirectly into the hole in the ground, even then it is forbidden, "Shleichakes aminin," in order not to give any credence to the heretics and perhaps suggest that this is a custom which has any basis or validity to it. In the public area, like the market, people won't understand that you're doing it because you don't want the ground to get dirty with blood. Most people don't really care if the ground in the public area gets dirty. So even if you do it in this way, where it only indirectly goes into the pit in the ground, it will still appear that that is your main goal over here, to follow the practice of these heretics. Just to add, the term used to describe a prohibition midrabbanon, which is based on not allowing other people to think that one is performing a sin, this is called maris ha'ayin, where it's forbidden to do this, even though essentially there's nothing intrinsically wrong with this act. However, because of the way it appears, it is forbidden midrabbanon because of maris ha'ayin. Mishnah Yud, it is forbidden under the severe punishment of Kores being, so to speak, cut off from Hashem, to offer up any korbanos outside of the Beis HaMikdash. That having been said, the punishment only applies if the animal which one offered up was something which was fit to be brought in the Beis HaMikdash as a regular korban, and instead of bringing it in the Beis HaMikdash, you offered it up outside of the Beis HaMikdash. And because of that, the punishment only applies if one had designated that animal to be a korban, and then he offered it up. But if it wasn't yet designated to be a korban and it didn't have that holy status of being a korban, an animal which was designated to be offered up on the Mizbeach, then one would not be liable to the punishment of Kores for offering it up outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, in a case where somebody did bring a korban outside of the Beis HaMikdash, it is forbidden to eat any of the meat of that korban. The Mishnah talks about a case where somebody slaughters a animal outside of the Beis HaMikdash, and he says that he is slaughtering it for the sake of it being a particular korban. However, he had not yet designated that animal to be a korban. So according to the rules of the punishment for this prohibition, it would not apply over here. Although he's saying that he is slaughtering it for the sake of it being a particular korban, he didn't designate it as a korban. It's all very nice that he's saying it's for the sake of a korban, but he didn't apply the status of a korban onto that animal. However, there is a concern that perhaps in his mind, before slaughtering it, he did designate it as a korban. The law is that one doesn't even need to say words. It's enough that he has the intention to designate an animal as a korban in order to give the animal that status. And therefore there is a concern that it might at least appear that he also intends to designate it as a korban. Because after all, he is saying that he is slaughtering it for the sake of it being a korban. So it appears that he also intends to give it that status. If indeed he does do that, then it would be the regular prohibition with the punishment. Now, it's an assumption that somebody who is obligated to bring a korban, that matter becomes known. If he did a particular sin for which he is obligated to bring a korban, so people find out about it. And therefore, in the case where somebody slaughters an animal and he does it for the sake, he says that he's doing it for the sake of an obligatory korban. In this case, there's no concern that people might think that he also is intending to designate it as a real korban. Because the fact that they haven't heard until now that he's obligated a carbon makes them assume that he's indeed not obligated to bring a carbon. Because whenever he's obligated to bring a carbon, they know about it. So the fact that they haven't heard this news that he's obligated to bring a carbon means that they think that he is not obligated. And therefore, when he says that he's slaughtering it for the sake of a particular obligatory carbon, people will not assume that he's intending to actually give it the status of a carbon, because they know that he's not obligated. So it begins the Mishnah. Sheikh Hashem, Oila, one who slaughters an animal for the sake of it being a carbon Oila. The animal had not yet been designated to be brought as a carbon, but now he is slaughtering it, and he says that he's doing it for the sake of it being a carbon Oila. So in terms of the words that he's saying, that not included in that is not the fact that he is giving it carbon status. The only question is, did he intend to do so in his mind? Or at least does it appear like he did? Now, a carbon oiler can be bought voluntarily, and therefore there is going to be a concern that it looks like he intended to give it the status of a carbon in his mind. L'shem zavachim, for the sake of it being a carbon shalomim, which can also be bought voluntarily. L'shem oshem toloi, for the sake of a carbon oshem toloi, which in general is brought in a case where somebody is unsure whether he's obligated to bring a carbon chatos. He's unsure whether he committed a particular sin. However, according to this Mishnah, one is even able to voluntarily bring an oshem toloi, because it could always be that one might have done an aveira. There's a slight, small chance that he did perform a sin, and therefore one is able to voluntarily bring an oshem toloi. L'shem pesach, for the sake of a carbon pesach, although this is an obligation, during the rest of the year, other than on the day before Pesach itself, when the carbon Pesach is offered up, if somebody designates a carbon to be bought as a carbon Pesach, it gains the status of a carbon, and it's bought as a carbon shalomim. So essentially, one is able to designate a carbon to be a carbon Pesach voluntarily, it will just be bought as a carbon shalomim. L'shem toida, for the sake of a carbon toida, which is bought in order to thank Hashem for being saved from a particular danger. Be as it may, since all of these things can be bought voluntarily, there is therefore a concern that it appears like he is designating it as a carbon. And if this animal does get carbon status, then the regular prohibition and punishment of offering a carbon outside of the Beis HaMikdash applies, and it is therefore forbidden to eat the meat of that animal. Shechitos epesula, its slaughtering is invalid, meaning it does not permit the meat to be eaten. However, Rabbi Shimon says that the slaughtering is valid and it can be eaten, because he's not concerned that other people might come to this conclusion, that it looks like he designated it to be a carbon. Continues the Mishnah. Then, if there are two people holding onto a knife and slaughtering the animal, one of the people who's performing that act of slaughtering has the intention that it be for the sake of one of these things, or he states that he's slaughtering it for the sake of it being one of these carbonos, and the other one has the intention for it to be a regular animal, a regular slaughtering, and he does not mention that he's doing it for the sake of it being a carbon. Even in this case, shechitos pesula, according to the first opinion of the Mishnah, the slaughtering would be invalid, since involved in this act of slaughtering is an intention, and possibly that which appears to be a designation for the sake of a carbon, and that is involved in this act of slaughtering, and therefore it would be invalid. On the other hand, if somebody slaughters and he says that he's doing it for the sake of it being a carbon chatos, for the sake of a carbon osham vadai, these are two different carbonos bought for atoning for one's sin. They are obligatory carbonos, for the sake of it being a firstborn animal, which one is obligated to bring as a carbon, he needs to designate it as a carbon. L'shem Meiser, for the sake of it being Meiser Behemah, what a tenth of one's animals, which are born each year, he is obligated to bring as a carbon. L'shem Temura, for the sake of it being in exchange for a different carbon which I already designated, I want to transfer the holiness from a different animal onto this animal. In general, the law is that in such a case, both animals will become holy and they'll gain carbon status. But as it may, since people have not heard about the fact that he's obligated a carbon, or the fact that he has designated a carbon, they therefore assume that he has not designated any carbon, and they don't take what he's saying seriously at all. They know that he's not designating it as an actual carbon, because they know, in their minds at least, that he has not got another animal which is designated as a carbon. So what he's saying now is certainly not to actually give the status of a carbon to this animal, and therefore the animal would not gain carbon status. Doesn't even appear like it gains carbon status, And therefore, the punishment for offering it outside of the Beis HaMikdash would not apply. And likewise, it would be permitted to eat that meat. Shechitosa kasheira, its slaughtering would be valid to permit its meat to be eaten. Zehaklol, this is the rule. Kol dovash nidov v'nidov hashechit lishmai asur. Any korban which can be bought voluntarily, if somebody slaughters the animal for the sake of that, it would be forbidden to eat it. But if it cannot be bought voluntarily, but only as an obligation, the one who slaughters the animal for that sake, the slaughtering would be valid to permit it to be eaten. And the difference is as we explained. Pergil Mishnah Aleph. A trefa is an animal which has a internal wound, which therefore causes it to be forbidden to eat. Literally, a trefa means that which is torn, because the example which the Torah talks about is an animal which was torn up by a different animal in the field. That's just a common example of how an animal can develop such a wound. Be as it may, this Mishnah is going to list 18 different types of internal wounds which would give the status of a trefa to the animal, in which case it would be forbidden to eat it, even if a valid slaughtering took place. And the Mishnah is extremely technical with many different parts of the body. Elu trefos v'behema, the following are considered to be trefos in a regular animal. That is an animal as opposed to a bird, which will be discussed later on in this perek. Alright, number one, kufos haveshet, if there is a hole going through both layers of skin which surround the food pipe. Number two, of sukas hagargeres, if there is a crack or a cut which covers the majority of the circumference going horizontally around the windpipe. In the next mission, we're going to see that if it's going vertically, then it wouldn't be considered a trefa as long as part of the windpipe still exists on the bottom of the top. But if there is a cut going horizontally, then as long as it covers the majority of the circumference of the windpipe, it would be considered a trefa. Thirdly, nikav krum shel moyach, if the membrane of the brain, the truth is there are two membranes, which are types of a tissue, thin layers of tissue, which cover different parts of the body. And the brain is covered by two of these membranes. And the Mishnah is talking about the inner membrane. If that has a hole in it, then it would also be a trefa. Number four, nikav halev leves chaloloi, if the heart has a hole in it, which goes all the way into its hollow part inside. The heart is made up of different chambers. If the wall of the heart has a hole in it, which goes all the way through until you get to the hollow inner part of the heart, then it would be forbidden to eat. Number five, nishbura hashidra, if part of the spine of the animal broke, v'nifsak hachutshala, and its nerve gets cut or cracked. And this is really the part which makes it into a trefa. The truth is that you don't even need the spine to break, just in general, when this nerve, which goes running down from the brain all the way down the spine of the animal, in general, if that is going to get cracked, then it usually comes together with the spine itself being cracked. Although the thing which gives it the status of a trefa is the fact that this nerve, which once again is surrounded by a thin layer of membrane, if that thin layer, if the majority of the circumference gets cracked, then it would be a trefa. Number six, niktlo hakovid v'lein shtarim en aklum, if the liver of the animal has been taken away and there's no liver left at all, this Mishnah implies that even if there is a tiny amount of the liver remaining, it would not be considered a trefa. Although it should be noted that the next Mishnah seems to argue on this and holds that there needs to be at least the size of an olive of the liver. But according to this Mishnah, as long as there is even a tiny amount of liver remaining in the animal, it would not be a trefa. Number seven, horeo shenikva, if the lungs of the animal have a hole in them, the lung is surrounded by two layers of membrane, and we're talking over here where there is a hole going through both layers. This is number eight already, if part of the lungs are missing. The lungs are also made up of different parts, and if one of the parts which are usually found in the lungs are not there, then it would be considered trefa. Rabbi Shimon is referring back to the seventh form of a trefa, when there is a hole in the walls of the lungs, and according to Rabbi Shimon, the hole has to go all the way through the entire wall of the lungs until it reaches the basis symphonis, which is the primary bronchi, which take on the appearance of many branches of a tree coming out of a tube of the lungs, and these branches sort of spread out within the lungs. So far we mentioned 8 out of 18 of these forms of trephus. Now, the next few on the list are all to do with the digestive system of the animal, and a kosher animal which chews the cud has 4 different stomachs. So now we're up to number 9, Nikvor HaKeva, if the keva, which is actually the fourth stomach, in which the food is processed and digested and broken down, if there is a hole in that stomach. Number 10, Nikvor HaMora, if the gallbladder gets a hole, Nikvor HaDakin, if there is a hole in the intestines. Number 12, HaKores HaPanim SheNikvor, if the inner part of the kores, which is the first stomach into which the food goes from the food pipe, the veshet, the kores is the first stomach into which the food goes. If there is a hole in the wall of this stomach, then it would be a trefa. And the 13th is oisha nikra chitzina, or if the majority of the outer wall of this stomach, which was thicker, even if the hole didn't reach through until the inside of the stomach, since the majority of this outer, thicker wall of the stomach gets a hole, then this would be a trefa. Rabbi Yehuda says, and we're going to understand that Rabbi Yehuda is not arguing, but he's rather clarifying that which the Tanna Kamma is stating. Hagdoilo tefach, for a large animal, this requires a hole, or a tear, really. A tear or a crack, which is at least the length of a tefach. V'aktana beruba, whereas a smaller animal requires that the majority have a tear in it. The truth is, even for a larger animal, a tefach is just a way of making sure that there is a tear which covers the majority of the wall of the stomach. So far the Mishnah has talked about the first stomach, the keres, and the final stomach, the keva. Now the Mishnah talks about the two middle stomachs, hemses uveis hakoisos, those are the names of the two middle stomachs, shenikvu lachutz, which have holes on the outside. The way we're going to understand this is that the hemses and the beis hakoisos were actually connected at one point. And the Mishnah is emphasizing that if there is a hole in the place of the connection between them, then it would not be a trefa. Only if it's on the outside of the hemses alone, or the beis hakoisos alone, if it's on the wall of one of those stomachs, then it would be considered a trefa. We're up to number 16, Nofla min hagag, if the animal fell off a roof. And we need to add that it was slaughtered straight away without seeing first if the animal could continue walking. Over here there is a concern that the bones of the animal were crushed. And more importantly, not just the bones, but primary organs perhaps were severely damaged. And if this is also considered to be a trefa, the Gemara adds that if we saw the animal walking, or we waited a while and we saw the animal was still properly alive and well, then it could be that it would not be considered a trefa. Number 17, Ishtabiru Tzaliseho, if the majority of the ribs of the animal broke. And number 18, Udrusas Hazaev, if the animal was trampled upon by a wolf. And the truth is, we mean that the wolf clawed its nails into this animal and injected venom into the animal. Rabbi Huda says, Drusas Hazaev Badaka, for a smaller animal such as a sheep, it would become a trefa if it is trampled upon and by a wolf and it claws its nails into it and injects venom. However, regarding a large animal, drusas ha'aribagasa, a larger animal like a cow would only become a trefa if this occurs via a lion. Now, in general, if a smaller animal claws away at a different animal which is larger than it, even if it manages to inject some venom into that animal, we assume that it is not life-threatening for the other animal, and it would not be considered a trefa. The Mishnah, however, brings two exceptions to that. Drusas ha-neitz be'oif hadak, if this is done by a bird called a neitz, which was a very small bird, if it did it towards another small bird, but which was larger than it, or drusas ha-gas be'oif hagas, or if a different bird called a gas, which was also relatively small, if it did this towards a larger bird, then since these animals are considered to be more dangerous, the animal which is the victim over here would become a trefa. And the Mishnah just sums up, after we've mentioned all the 18 types of trefas, Zahaklo, this is the rule, kol she'in komoyo chaya, any type of wound which is assumed to make sure that an animal with such a wound will not live, and we should add, will not live at least 12 months. That's how the Gemara explains. Trefa is considered to be a trefa. However, this is limited to the 18 examples which the Mishnah gave. Those are the examples of trefas which the Chachomim have a tradition that these are what makes an animal not kosher, and it is these 18 trefas alone which would indeed give an animal the status of a trefa.